Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the British High Court, the United Kingdom's highest judicial body, which recently ruled that the legal definition of a woman is limited only to people who are born biologically female. In the terribly misguided but unanimous opinion of the five-member High Court, and I want to warn you, this can be highly triggering language. If you need to cover your ears with the noise-canceling headphones located in the back of the pew in front of you, we will wait while you do so. Okay, everybody ready? Let's proceed with caution. The court said, quote, "The concept of sex is binary. A person is either a woman or a man. The unanimous decision of this court is that the terms woman and sex refer to a biological woman and biological sex," end quote. I know, painful to hear such blasphemy, but a useful reminder of how backwards, repressive, and unenlightened so many people still are. The court made this ruling in the context of being asked whether the sex-based protections of the 2010 Equality Act also applied to transgender women, to which they said no. The question has been whether the requirement that half of all board members in Scottish public organizations be women could be satisfied by having transgender women in those seats, and the ruling reversed the law's own provisions that they could, thus deciding that only people guessed female at birth are eligible to satisfy the gender parity requirement. Allies of the holy acronym string, of course, now fear that domestic violence shelters for women will be allowed to exclude transgender women, that women's sports will return to prohibiting transgender competitors, and that public loos will again become anatomically discriminatory. A truly sad day for gender anarchists everywhere. Please join us in shedding a gender-fluid tear for the death of the British sexual enlightenment. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend!
Second, and this is really more of a news note than an announcement of cancellation because, frankly, we're just too excited to keep this off the menu for today. A new study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, JAMA, shows that women aged 18 to 25 have finally succeeded in overtaking men of the same age in a highly competitive social metric that has historically been completely dominated by the men. Binge drinking. That's right, young women are getting drunk more often than young men. Between 2021 and 2023, 32% of women aged 18 to 25 reported engaging in binge drinking in the previous month, compared with just 30% of men of the same age. We simply can't overstate how wonderful it is to see yet another triumph for feminism. Finally, alcohol abuse is an endeavor women have proven themselves to be better at than men. Win, win, and more win. Now, it is worth noting that the definition of binge drinking for women is lower than for men because women's bodies are typically smaller than men's. For men, the definition is 5 drinks at a time or more, whereas for women, it's just 4. So, yes, the women are being allowed to drink from the ladies' tees, so to speak, in order to make the competition fair, but if that's what it takes to beat the men at their own drinking games, so be it. And if we all work together, perhaps one day feminism can truly triumph and we will have a world where women are better at many things traditionally thought of as areas of male superiority. Belching in public, scratching themselves inappropriately, throwing dirty laundry on the floor, forgetting birthdays and anniversaries, leaving the toilet seat up, drinking straight from the milk jug, making lewd comments, leaving towels uneven on the rack, wearing cargo shorts, whistling at attractive potential mates, and the as-yet unassailable center of male social victory, nose-picking. One day, if we all dream hard enough, women too will dig and flick even better than their men do. That truly will be a beautiful day for femininity everywhere. But for now, be glad that women are finally being more irresponsible with alcohol than men are, even though they have to be graded on the beer pong curve to do so. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend!
Finally, it is with great reverence and immeasurable respect that we award our highest honor, the triple platinum tambourine with four hemp tassels of commendation, to the delightfully anti-Catholic propaganda film Conclave, starring Ralph Fiennes, Stanley Tucci, and the absurdly miscast John Lithgow. Never before have we seen a film so unabashedly bashing one of the key enemies of our order, the Holy Roman See, and yet receiving nearly unquantifiable promotional value at Easter time due to the timely passing of Pope Francis. And add to this the fact that Amazon is actually using the death of the Pope as a pretext for offering the movie for free on Prime, knowing that audiences around the world will eagerly consume its brilliantly bigoted portrayal of the Catholic Church without even realizing how insidious the message is to their misguided faith. Now, I know some of you have not seen it and may be wondering how it could be possible that a film which clearly wants nothing more than to erode Catholics' faith in their leadership could have so blithely slipped by at a time like this, and I must confess, even I have no good theory for it. Nevertheless, we are truly impressed, and it's worth noting some of the crucial elements of the film. Also, I know some of you won't want me to spoil the main plot, so suffice it to say the ending is the most wonderfully anti-Catholic part of the movie, sure to make adherents question their own dogmas, even though it is completely disjointed from the rest of the plot. But what makes this bit of agitprop so powerful? At a time when a billion Catholics are anticipating their own real-life leaders meeting to select a new pontiff, a process which is zealously guarded in secrecy, this movie throws open the shutters and shows them a distasteful portrayal of the petty politics and egomaniacal machinations only their worst nightmares could have imagined taking place during the conclave of bishops. The reformers are portrayed as the heroes, of course, and rightly so, but still deeply flawed. The conservatives are portrayed, rightly, as dangerous advocates for oppression and intolerance. And the one person who appears to be uniquely virtuous, honorable, and sincere doesn't even want the appointment because his own crisis of faith is leading him away from the church. A perfect panorama of foibles. Add to this lies, pretense, manipulation, scandal, secrets, betrayal, and sheer naked politics at the heart of the selection process, and you really have given Catholics everywhere a vivid and unforgettably poisoned lens through which not only this conclave, but all future conclaves will be perceived. And the genius of it is precisely the doubts it will raise in the total absence of any contrary portrayal being made available by the church itself in defense of its own uprightness. Oh, and did I mention the vital role played by women who, of course, are disallowed from holding any positions of significant leadership in the great Holy Roman Church of Misogyny? It is an unashamed takedown, right up to and including that ending, which we simply must sit back and applaud for its audacity, for its power, and for its effectiveness against a deafeningly defenseless defendant. It's a real Hail Mary for the lapsed, non-practicing, and disillusioned Catholics everywhere. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Before you leave, we have had a question raised by several conscientious members of the Othership who wanted some terminology guidance going forward. This week was the 15th anniversary of the Deepwater Horizon oil rig disaster, and one member asked how we should describe the location where that tragedy took place. On the one hand, we oppose the jingoistic renaming of the Gulf of Mexico by President There's No Way We're Saying His Name because it seems rooted in anti-Hispanic sentiment. However, we have also strongly endorsed the change because it favors the mindset that name changes are good and normal, which, of course, our order depends on. Meanwhile, Escambia County, Florida actually rebranded their famous and iconic sailfish sign to say Gulf of America, clearly proving that the sign is correct in claiming that these are the world's whitest beaches. But where should we say the explosion occurred? If we say Gulf of America, we seem to be giving power to that dastardly man in the White House. But if we say Gulf of Mexico, aren't we guilty of first-degree felony dead naming? Something we certainly don't want to be accused of. To answer the question, our sacred and pungent board of language examiners convened over the course of 5 days to ponder the question, and their answer was definitive. The Deepwater Horizon disaster occurred 15 years ago in the Gulf of America. Because just as the Wachowski sisters made The Matrix, Elliot Page was nominated for an Oscar in Juno, and Caitlyn Jenner shattered records in her decathlon, there is not now nor has there ever been a Gulf of Mexico. And let all who dead name her be condemned. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otheren, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.